something red. As Nicholas discovered, riding a reindeer is a little easier than you think. It is a bit of a bumpy ride, but still a lot better than walking, especially walking on blistered feet. Indeed, even the bumpiness was something that Nicholas grew used to. He sat there, holding his hand delicately over his coat pocket to help keep Mika warm. "I need to give you a name," he told the reindeer. "Names might not be important to reindeer, but they are important to people. What about..." He closed his eyes and he remembered the dream he'd had of sledging by Lake Blitzen as a child. "Blitzen!" The reindeer's ears pricked up and he raised his head. Nicholas decided that Blitzen it should be. "That's what I'm going to call you, if that's all right." And it seemed as if it was right. Nicholas, Mika and Blitzen travelled together for what seemed like days. It got colder and colder, and Nicholas was thankful for having Blitzen, the old lady's shawl and Mika to keep his hand warm in his pocket. He often leant forward to hug the reindeer and to feed him from the supply of mushrooms and berries he kept in his right-hand pocket. Eventually the landscape became entirely white, and Nicholas knew that they were at the end of the empty bit on the map. The snow got deeper and the wind got harsher, but Blitzen proved tough. His strong legs and sturdy frame powered through the deepening snow. It became difficult to see far ahead amid all the whiteness. But something was rising on the horizon, a vast, white, wide, craggy peak. Finally, as the tiny silver of a sickle moon hung low in the sky, the snow stopped falling and they reached the very large mountain. Nicholas gave Blitzen his second-to-last mushroom and his last one to Mika. He ate nothing himself, though his stomach rumbled like a distant storm. The mountain seemed to go on forever. The further they climbed, the higher it seemed to get. Blitzen was beginning to slow down, as if he was finally exhausted. "Good boy, Blitzen," Nicholas kept saying, wearily. "Good boy." He kept one hand over Mika to keep him safe in his pocket and occasionally used the other to pat the reindeer's back. Blitzen's feet were pressing on nothing but snow now, and it was getting thicker. It was a wonder he kept going at all. Nicholas felt blinded by the white, until at last, halfway up the mountain, there was a flash of red, looking like a streak of blood, a scar in the snow. Nicholas jumped off the reindeer and clambered through the freezing whiteness towards it. It was hard work and he sank into the snow, knee-deep every time he took a step. It was as if the mountain wasn't a mountain, but just a giant pile of snow. Eventually he got there. It wasn't blood, though. It was a red hat, and he recognised it in an instant. It was his father's red hat, the hat he had made from the red flag and a fluffy white cotton bobble. It was cold and frozen and clogged with powdery snow, but there was no mistaking it. Nicholas felt a deep, piercing anguish shoot through his weak body. He feared the worst had happened. "Papa!" he shouted over and over again. He dug with his hands into the snow. "Papa!" He tried to tell himself that finding his father's hat didn't mean anything. Maybe it just blown off his head, and he had been in a hurry and hadn't been able to find it again. Maybe. But when your bones ache with cold and when you are starving with hunger, it is hard to keep looking on the bright side. "Papa!" He stayed there digging the snow with his bare hands until, shaking and frozen, he finally burst into tears. "It's all useless," Nicholas told Mika, who was looking out of his coat pocket with his small, shivering head, braving the cold. "It's no use. He's probably dead. We must turn around." He then shouted louder, addressing Blitzen. "We must head south. I'm sorry. I should never have taken you with me. I shouldn't have taken either of you. It's too harsh and too dangerous, even for a reindeer. Let's go back where we came from." But Blitzen wasn't listening. He was walking away, struggling through the thick snow, climbing further up the mountain. "Blitzen, you're going the wrong way. There's nothing for us there." But still Blitzen kept walking. He turned his head as if to tell Nicholas to keep going. And for a moment, Nicholas thought about staying still. Just staying there until the snow covered him. Until he was, like his father, part of the mountain itself. There seemed no point in going forward or backward. He realised how stupid he had been to leave the cottage. Hope finally left him. It was so cold his tears froze on his face. He knew it wouldn't take him long to die, shivering. He watched Blitzen climb. Blitzen! He closed his eyes and he stopped crying, waited for the chill to leave his bones and peace to come at last. But in a matter of minutes, he felt a gentle, tender nudge against his ears. Opening his eyes, he saw Blitzen's unblinking eyes behind a cloud of warm breath, looking at him in a way that made him think that he understood everything. What was it that made Nicholas climb back on the reindeer? Was it hope? Was it courage? Was it just a need to finish what he had started? One thing is certain, Nicholas felt something beginning to burn inside him. Weak and tired and cold and hungry and sad as he was, he grabbed hold of his father's hat, shook off the snow, put it on his head, and climbed back onto the reindeer. And the reindeer, tired and cold and hungry as he was, carried on walking up the mountain, because this is what mountains are for. The end of magic. If you keep on climbing a mountain, you will eventually reach the top. That's the thing with mountains. However big they are, there is always a top. Even if it takes all through the day and all through another night, you will usually get there if you keep remembering there is a top. Well, unless the mountain is the Himalayas, in which case the mountain just keeps on going. And even though you know there is a top, you freeze to death and all your toes fall off before you get there. But this wasn't that big a mountain, and Nicholas's toes didn't fall off. He, Blitzen and Mika, carried on, as green curtains of light filled the night sky. Look, Mika, it's the Northern Lights. And Mika stood on his little hind legs in Nicholas's pocket and stared up and saw the vastness of the sky was filled with beautiful, mysteriously ghostly light. To be honest, Mika didn't care. Beauty is not of particular interest to a mouse, unless it was the beauty of the creamy yellowness or blue veininess of a nice piece of cheese. So, as soon as Mika peeked his head out of Nicholas's pocket, he curled back down again. Isn't it wonderful? Said Nicholas, gazing up at the aurora, which looked to him like someone had sprinkled glowing green dust across the heavens. Warmth is wonderful, said Mika. By sunrise, they reached the top of the mountain, and though the sky was blue and the northern lights had disappeared, they were still glowing, just lower down now in the valley, beyond the mountain. And this aurora wasn't just any variety of green, it was every colour of the rainbow. Nicholas looked at the map, trying to recognise any of the landscape. Beyond the mountain, the elf village was supposed to be there, visible, but there was nothing but a snow-filled plain of land leading towards the horizon. Actually, no. There was some hills in the distance to the northwest with tall pine trees, but there was no other sign of life. They continued to head directly north towards the multicoloured lights, down the mountain trudging through the light-filled air. It was incredible how quickly Nicholas's spirits fell. On top of the mountain, everything had seemed possible, but now, trudging through the thick snow, he was getting worried again. I must be going mad, Nicholas said. His hunger was beginning to hurt, as though there was something alive, growling and moving inside his stomach. He pulled his father's hat down over his ears. They walked on through the snow, which was starting to thin a little, but still falling very heavy, and through red and yellow and green and purple-tinged air. Also, Nicholas could sense that something was wrong with Blitzen. He was slowing down and his head kept dropping so low that Nicholas couldn't see his antlers. You need to sleep. I need to sleep. We've got to stop. But Blitzen didn't stop. He kept on, one faltering step after another, until his knees buckled and he collapsed in the snow with a thud. Nicholas was trapped under him, and Blitzen, one of the largest reindeers there had ever been, was heavy. Mika crawled out of Nicholas's pocket and scampered over the snowy ground round to Blitzen, scratching at his face to try and wake him. "Blitzen, wake up! You're on my leg!" shouted Nicholas. But Blitzen wasn't waking up. He could feel his leg was getting crushed, and the pain throbbed from his ankle through to his entire body until there was little else to think about, just pain. He tried pushing against Blitzen's back and wriggling his leg in the snow. If Nicholas hadn't been so weak and hungry, he might have been able to free himself. But Blitzen was getting heavier and colder all the time. "Blitzen!" yelled Nicholas. "Blitzen!" He realised he could die just here and no one would know or care. Terror filled Nicholas with a new kind of chill. As the strange lights kept shifting in the air around him, red, yellow, blue, green and purple. "Mika, go! I think I'm stuck here. Go on, go!" Mika looked around, worried, but then saw something. Something Nicholas's human eyes couldn't see. "What is it, Mika?" Mika squeaked an answer that Nicholas couldn't understand. "Cheese," said Mika. "I smell cheese." Of course, there was no cheese to be seen, but that didn't stop Mika. If you believed in something, you didn't need to see it. And so the mouse ran and kept running. The snow was thick and light and fluffy and evenly spread on the ground. And Mika was fast, churning through it and heading north. Nicholas watched his mouse friend become a dot and then disappear completely. "Goodbye, my friend. Good luck." He lifted his hand to wave. His fingers were so cold that they had turned a deep, dark purple. It felt as if they were burning up, and his stomach ached with cramp. His legs, squeezed between the weight of a reindeer and the weight of the world, was in agony, and he closed his eyes and imagined a vast feast. Ham and gingerbread and chocolate and cake and bilberry pie. Nicholas lay back in the snow and felt an overwhelming exhaustion, as though life was leaving him. Mika had disappeared, and then Nicholas felt so dreadful he said something equally dreadful, the very worst thing that anyone can say. "Close your eyes and ears, especially if you are an elf." "There is no magic," he said, delirious, and after that everything became darkness. Father Toppo and Little Noosh. There were voices in the dark. "Kibicha, Loska, Kibicha, Tiki," said one voice. It was a strange voice, small, fast and high-pitched. A girl's voice, maybe. "Tahur, Atuma, Loska, Anuska, Noosh." The second voice was slower and deeper, but still strange. It was almost like singing. Was he dead? Well, no, not quite. But nor was he alive, and if they found him and Blitzen, even just a minute later, they would have found two dead bodies. The first thing Nicholas noticed was the warmth. It felt like a kind of warm syrup pouring into him from the inside. He did not yet feel the small hand pressed against his heart, but he could still hear the voices, even if they did sound a million miles away. "Was it Grandpa?" "What is it, Grandpa?" said the high-pitched voice, which now, even more weirdly, Nicholas could understand perfectly, as if it was his own language. "It's a boy, Noosh," said the other. "A boy? But he's taller than you, Grandpa." "That's because he's a special kind of boy." "A special kind? What kind?" "He's human," the deeper voice said carefully. There was a gasp. "A human? Will he eat us?" "No. Should we run away?" "It's perfectly safe, I'm sure. And if it is not, we must never let fear be our guide. Look at his weird ears." "Yes, human ears can take a lot of getting used to." "But what about what happened to..." "Come on, Little Noosh. We mustn't think of that. We must always help those who are in trouble, even if they are human." "He looks terrible." "Yes, he does. That's why we must do everything we can, Noosh. Is it working? Yes, a degree of worry rose up in his voice. I believe it is, and on the reindeer too. Blitzen woke and slowly rolled over, taking his weight off Nicholas, whose eyes were now blinking awake. Nicholas gasped. For a moment he didn't know where he was. Then he saw the two creatures, and he gasped again, because that is what you do if you see elves. The elves were both quite short, as elves tend to be, although one was taller than the other. Nicholas could see the smaller one was a girl elf. She had black hair and skin whiter than snow, and sharp cheeks and pointed ears and large eyes slightly too far apart. She was wearing a dark green and brown tunic that didn't look very warm, but she didn't seem to be cold. The older and bigger elf was wearing a similar coloured tunic and a red belt. He had a long white moustache and white hair and a serious but kind look about him. His eyes twinkled like morning frost in sunshine. "Who are you?" asked Nicholas. But really he meant what and rather than who. "I am Little Noosh," said Little Noosh. "What's your name?"
"I'm Nicholas."
"And I'm Father Topu, Noosh's grandpa," said the other elf, who was looking around him to see if anyone was watching. "Well, great-great-great-great-great-grandpa, if you're being specific. We are elves." "Elves. Am I dead?" asked Nicholas, which was a bit of a silly question, as for the first time in weeks he could feel warmth flooding through his veins and excitement rising in his chest. "No, you're not dead," said Father Topu. "Despite your best efforts, you are very much alive, thanks to the goodness we found inside you." Nicholas was confused. "But I don't feel cold or weak." "Grandpa works a little magic," said Little Noosh.
"Magic?"
"A little drumwick."
"Drumwick? What's that?"
Little Noosh looked at Nicholas and then looked at her grandpa and back again.
"You don't know what drumwick is," she said.
Father Topu looked down at the little elf girl. "He's from the other side of the mountain. There's not much magic where humans come from." He smiled at Nicholas and Blitzen. "A drumwick is a hope spell. You just close your eyes and wish for something, and if you wish in just the right kind of way, you can make it happen. It's one of the earliest spells laid out in the Book of Hope and Wonder. That's an elf book about magic. I put my hand on you and your reindeer friend, and I wish you to be warm and to be strong and to be always safe."
"Always safe," said Nicholas, confused, and Blitzen licked his ear. "That's impossible."
Little Noosh gasped as Father Topu covered his ears. "Elves can never say that word." He shook his head. "An impossibility is just a possibility you don't understand yet. But now you must leave Elfhelm," said Father Topu, "and you must leave quickly."
"Elfhelm? The elf village?" said Nicholas. "But I'm not even there yet."
Little Noosh laughed a long elf laugh, which is a very long laugh indeed. Father Topu gave her a stern look.
"What's so funny?" asked Nicholas,
thinking that even if you had saved someone's life, it was still rather rude to laugh at them.
"We are standing on the street of the Seven Curves," giggled Little Noosh.
"What?
This isn't a street. It's the middle of nowhere. It's just snow and colours."
Little Noosh looked at Father Topu.
"Tell him, Grandpa. Tell him."
Father Topu looked around to check that no one was watching and quickly explained. "This is the longest street in Elfhelm. We are in the southeast corner of the village. The street winds westward all the way to the wooded hills beyond the fringes of the village."
"The wooded hills? But I can't see anything, just colours in the air."
"And over there is a silver lake and the reindeer field and all the shops on the reindeer field street," said Little Noosh, jumping up and down and pointing to the north.
"The lake? What lake?"
"And there's Elfhelm Village Hall," she said, pointing to the opposite direction, to nothing in particular. Nicholas didn't understand. He stood up.
"What are you talking about?"
"Is he blind?" asked Little Noosh. Father Topu looked at Nicholas and then at Little Noosh, and very quietly he said,
"To see something, you have to believe in it.
Really believe it. That's the first elf rule.
You can't see something you don't believe in. Now try your hardest and see if you can see what you have been looking for. The Elf Village. Nicholas looked around him as slowly the hundreds of colours floating in the air became less ghostly and more real, more intense and vivid and solid. Nicholas watched as the colours that had been before him, floating free as gas in the air, formed themselves into lines and shapes and squares, triangles and rectangles, roads and buildings, and a whole village appearing out of the air. The elf village they were standing on, a street full of small green cabins. There was another road, a bigger one, cutting into it from the east, and Nicholas looked down at the ground. There was still snow. That hadn't changed. He cast his eyes along the wider road, heading north in front of him. On each side of the road stood buildings, timber framed with snow, and Nicholas saw that one of the buildings had a giant wooden clog hanging outside. Another had a little spinning top painted onto a sign. A toy shop, maybe. Beyond that was the lake that little Noosh had told him about, like an oversized oval mirror, which was right next to a field full of reindeer. Blitzen had noticed this too, and was looking over with interest. To the west, before the wooded hills, was a large round dark tower pointing to the sky. Directly to the north was the place that little Noosh had been pointing towards, Elfhelm Village Hall, made of dark, almost black timber. It was by far the largest building in the whole village, and not as tall as the tower. It was only two stories high, but wide and with around 20 windows which glowed with light. Nicholas could hear singing and the smell of something sweet and wonderful wafting from that direction. Something he hadn't smelt in over a year. Gingerbread. If anything, it smelt even better than it had done outside the baker's shop in that funny village. Kristinankepunki? Yeah, I'm not going to be able to say that, sorry. Wow, Elfhelm, my father was right. It's just how he described it. I like your hat, said little Noosh. Thanks, said Nicholas. He took the hat off and looked at it. It's my father's hat. He was on an expedition to Elfhelm. I wanted to know if he had made it. He was with six other men. He was called... But little Noosh started excitedly talking over him. Red is my favourite colour after green and yellow. I like every colour, really, except purple. Purple makes me feel sad thoughts. That is where we live, she told him. She pointed towards a red and green cabin a small way in the distance. It's wonderful, said Nicholas, but I also wondered if you'd seen a mouse. Yes, shouted little Noosh. Father Topu quickly covered her mouth with his hand. Okay, human child, now you've seen Elfhelm, you had better take your reindeer and go. Whatever you expect to find won't be here. Blitzen nudged Nicholas's shoulder, as if he understood the urgency in Father Topu's voice. But Nicholas stayed. I came to find my father, he said. I've travelled over 1,000 miles. Blitzen and I are not going to turn around and go back. The old elf shook his head. I'm sorry, it's not wise for a human to be here. You must go back to the south. It's for your own good. Nicholas looked into Father Topu's eyes and pleaded. My father is all I've got. I need to know if he made it to Elfhelm. He could be our pet, suggested little Noosh. Father Topu patted the elf girl on the head. I don't think humans like to be pets, little Noosh. Please, I come here peacefully. I just want to know what happened to my father. Father Topu considered. I suppose given the season, there might be a chance you could be welcomed. This excited little Noosh. Let's take him to the hall. I won't cause any trouble, I promise, said Nicholas. Father Topu gave a quick glance over to the tall circular tower in the west. Trouble doesn't always have to be caused. It's sometimes already there. Nicholas had no idea what this meant, but he followed the elves as they walked in their clogs towards the wood hall beyond the lake. They walked onto the broad shopping street, passing a sign that declared simply the main path and the clog shop. and bakery with smoke-stained windows and a toy and sleigh shop, with a poster advertising lessons at the School of Sleighcraft. He also passed a crooked black-tiled building with windows made of ice. "The Daily Snow," read the sign outside. "The main elf newspaper," explained Father Topu. "Full of fear and nonsense." There were three copies of the newspaper piled high outside. "Little Kip is still missing," was the headline, and Nicholas wondered who Little Kip was. He was about to ask, but though they were small, the elves were fast walkers and they were already some way ahead. He and Blitzen were struggling to keep up. "What's that building?" he asked. "The tall tower." "Look," said Father Topu, changing the subject. "That's the North Pole." He pointed at a thin green rod sticking out of the ground. Little Noosh spoke up. "Do you think Father Vodol will be kind?" "I think it will be all right," said the old elf. "Come on, Little Noosh. We elves are kind and welcoming in our hearts. We will always, well, we always used to be. Even Father Vodol knows that. And the paper says, this season's latest clogs, the Daily Snow. Price is 2 chocolate coins. And then it's got Little Kip is still missing and reindeer flu. And then pine roots cause hall mayhem. That's what's on the front page. Nicholas was confused. Father Topo, the old elf corrected him. Father Topu, sorry. I just wanted to ask if... Here you are, Blitzen, exclaimed Little Noosh. They had reached the clear, icy lake. Just beyond it lay an open field where 7 other reindeer were happily chewing lichen from the trees. Do you know if my father... Father Topu ignored him and called out to the reindeer. Oh, dearlings, come here. Here's a new friend. Meanwhile, Little Noosh went back to talking about her favourite colours. I quite like indigo. It's much nicer than purple and crimson. And turquoise and magenta. Blitzen stood behind Nicholas and nuzzled his shoulder. He's a bit antisocial, Nicholas explained to Father Topu. But one of the reindeers, a female, came over and gave Blitzen the gift of some grass. For a moment, Nicholas thought he saw his feet actually leave the ground. A gap between where the reindeer's body had ended and where his shadow began. But maybe he just imagined that. Ah, that's Donna, said Little Noosh. The kindest of all. Little Noosh started pointing at all the other reindeers. And there's Comet with a white streak on his back. And Prancer, he's so funny. Skipping with Cupid. Cupid will lick your hand off if you let him. The dark one. Oh, that's Vixen. She's a little bit grumpy thing, yeah. And that one's Dancer and Dasher, who's the fastest of the lot. You okay, boy? Nicholas asked Blitzen. But Blitzen was already off making friends, and Nicholas noticed that the scar on Blitzen's leg had totally healed. Once Blitzen was grazing contentedly, they walked on past the sign pointing west to the wooded hills where the pixies live. The music got louder, and the scent of gingerbread stronger, and the sense of fear mixed with the strange excitement until they had reached the door of the old village hall. Oh, and you do know what day it is, don't you? Said Father Topu with a nervous smile. No, don't even know what month it is. It's the 23rd of December, 2 days till Christmas. This is our Christmas party, the only party we're allowed now, but not as good as it used to be, because dancing has been banned. Nicholas couldn't believe he had been away that long, but there were even harder things to believe. And he was about to find out. The mystery of Little Kip. If you were an 11-year-old boy of sufficient height like Nicholas, you would have to duck to get in through the Elfhelm Village Hall door. But once he was inside, Nicholas was overwhelmed by what he saw. There were 7 extremely long wooden tables around which were seated elves. Hundreds of elves. There were small elves and slightly less small elves. And there were children, child elves and grown-up elves, thin ones and fat ones and some were in between ones. He'd always imagined that seeing the elves would be the happiest thing in the world. But the atmosphere was very miserable. The elves were divided according to the colour of their tunic. "I'm a green tunic," said Father Topu. "So that means we sit at the top table. The green tunics are members of the elf council. The blue tunics are the elves who have specialisms, like toy making or sleigh craft or gingerbread making. And the brown tunics are the elves with no specialism. It didn't used to be like this. Before Father Vidal, we all sat together. That was what being an elf meant, togetherness."
"Who is Father Vidal?"
"Shh, not so loud, he'll hear you." When Nicholas had imagined an elf Christmas, he had always thought there would be singing and that there would be lots of sweet things to eat and that there were sweet things. Oh, sorry, and there were sweet things to eat. The whole place smelt of cinnamon and gingerbread, though the elves didn't seem to be enjoying the food much. There was also singing, but the elves were singing it in the most miserable voices imaginable, despite the happy lyrics. "Our problems, well, they come and go. They fall and melt, just like the snow. But so long as we can smile and sing, problems, they won't mean a thing. Because we can feast and we can rhyme, we can be happy. It's Christmas time." But no one was happy. The faces were all sad, all sour, and Nicholas felt uneasy. He whispered to Father Topu,
"What's the matter? Why do they look so unhappy?"
Before Topu could answer, his great-great-great-great-grandfather provided that not all elves were unhappy. She was also squealing with joy.
"It's nearly Christmas time!"
There was silence and a tightening of air, as if the whole room was holding its breath. All the elves had noticed them and now turned to look at Nicholas. Father Topu cleared his throat.
"Hello, elves. It looks like we have a special guest, just in time for Christmas. Now, as it is Christmas time, we should show some kindness to others. And I think we should all show some good old-fashioned elf hospitality, even if he's human."
The elves gasped at the word.
"A human?" one cried. "What about the new rules?"
The elf, who was wearing a blue tunic had a strange beard. It was stripy. He was pointing to a poster torn from the Daily Snow that was printed on the wall. It said, "The new rules for elves." And then he gave a list. Nicholas forced himself to smile and wave, but there was an awkward silence and only one elf child waved back. Some of the older elves tutted and grumbled to themselves, and it made no sense. Weren't elves supposed to be friendly? Every time Nicholas had pictured an elf, he had pictured a happy creature smiling and dancing and toy making and offering gifts of gingerbread. That was certainly what Father had told him. But maybe the stories weren't factually correct. The elves had just turned and said nothing and gave very long glares. He's never considered glaring as such an important part of being an elf.
"Should I leave?" asked Nicholas, feeling uncomfortable.
"No, no, 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 no," said little Noosh. And then, just to be clear, "No." Father Topu shook his head. "There's no need for that. You can just sit down there with us. We'll find some seats at the top table." The whole hall stayed quiet, listening to Father Topu's clogs tapping on the tiled floor. And all three of them walked the length of the room. It was quite dark, and with only 5 flaming torches on the wall, but Nicholas wished it was darker still so that he couldn't be seen. Indeed, he wished he wasn't there at all, even though the food on each table was tantalising for a boy who had known nothing but mushrooms and the occasional cloudberry or leganberry these past few weeks. Gingerbread, sweet plum soup, jam pastries and bilberry pie. Oh, little Noosh held Nicholas's hand. Her hand was small, but her fingers were long and thin with pointed little nails. She had, like many young elves, new goodness when she saw it. She had no doubt in her mind that despite being human and having human ears, Nicholas was somebody she shouldn't be afraid of. She led him to a seat. Half the elves at the table left in horror as they saw him approach, which meant there were now a lot of empty seats for him to choose from. He sat in the one right next to little Noosh, and as he did, the sight of so much delicious food made him momentarily to forget all the elves watching him, and he picked up a bowl of plum soup from the middle of the table and drank it in one go. Then he stuffed 4 jam pastries into his mouth, and he made a start on a slab of gingerbread before he noticed an elf woman opposite him, tutting. The elf woman had bright blonde hair and 2 plaits that stuck out of the side of her head, horizontally, in perfect straight lines. "We don't want your kind here," she said. "Not after last time." "But he's nice," said little Noosh. "He wears a red hat." "No one wears a red hat. Can be a bad person. Red is the colour of life and love and sunsets." "Last time," said Nicholas. "Leave him alone, mother," said Father Topu. "He means no harm." "Harm? Harm? Of course he means harm. You ask little Kip. If he means no harm, he's human. Humans are all harm." Another elf, solemnly faced, at another table, piped up. "Father Vidal won't be happy." Father Topu considered. "That might be true, Father Dorin, but we are good elves," he sighed. Nicholas was confused. "Who is little Kip?" asked Nicholas, remembering the headline in the Daily Snow. And as he said the words, "little Kip," the other elves at the table stopped eating. "It's probably best not to say anything," shushed Father Topu. "Can I just ask you one more thing?" said Nicholas. "I'd just eat your food and then we should probably..." Before Father Topu could finish his sentence, another elf walked towards the table. This elf was the tallest of all of the elves, but he was still only the same height as Nicholas when he was sitting down. He had a long pointed nose and a black beard that stretched almost to his knees, covering his tunic, and he had the kind of screwed up, unpleasant face of someone heading into a permanently strong icy wind. He was also holding a black wooden staff. All the elves who were seated around the table looked away or bowed their heads or nervously played with their food. "No more singing," he said to the hall. "Singing leads to merriment, and merriment leads to foolishness. I have told you, and this," he was pointing at Nicholas, "is why." Nicholas stopped eating and met the stare of the scowling black-bearded elf. His heart began to gallop and a cold sense of dread fell over him. An unpleasant encounter, but I'll read you the rules. The new rules for elves. Number 1. Know your place. Number 2. Do not spickle dance. Number 3. Do not play with toys in public. Number 4. Do not play with spinning tops in private or public. Number 5. Avoid joy and merriment at all times. Number 6. Worry more. Number 7. Resist goodwill. Number 8. Put your own interests before others. Number 9. Don't talk to pixies or trolls or other non-elves. Number 10. Never, under any circumstances, allow a human into elf helm. That doesn't sound very happy, does it? Not playing with spinning tops. What's wrong with them? Anyway, an unpleasant encounter. "Ah, Father Vidal," said Father Topu. "What a wonderful Christmas party. It's very good that you as a leader of the Elf Council have made it so." "Never mind Christmas," he said. The hall fell into total silence, and then Father Vidal spoke again with quiet menace. "Father Topu, I need to speak with you and the human in the council room now." The council room? The elf raised his staff and pointed towards the stairs. Now, Father Topu. No delay. Quick as a reindeer. Father Topu nodded, and he turned and told Little Noose to wait there and beckoned for Nicholas to follow him. Nicholas did as he was told, but felt a little ridiculous at having to duck as he climbed up the stairs at the back of the hall up to the top floor, with a very low ceiling and with even lower timber beams. Nicholas followed the elves past two others in black clothes. They were male elves but had no beards. They were guarding a door that said Council Room. Then Nicholas found himself in a room that he was a bit too tall for. There was a long table and 20 chairs around it. Each of the chairs had a name engraved into it. Shut the door, said Father Vidal before addressing Father Topu. Were you not at the last meeting? He asked, pointing to the chair with Father Topu's name engraved on it. Yes, yes I was. So you will know about the new rules for elves. No humans must be brought here. Well, I didn't bring him here. I found him. Him and his collapsed reindeer. A whisker from death. So I... As Father Topu became nervous, Father Vidal stared intently at the elf's clogs. Within a second, the white-haired elf was off his feet, floating in the air. So you what? Asked Father Vidal. Nicholas noticed Father Topu was now gasping for air, even though Father Vidal was nowhere near him. Father Topu had tipped upside down and was now rising towards the ceiling, with nothing holding on to him. Biscuits fell out of his pockets and his moustache dropped beside his nose. Please, Nicholas said. It's not his fault. He was only trying to... And then Nicholas stopped speaking because his mouth was closed shut. He couldn't move his lips or his jaw. Father Vidal might have been short, but his magic was strong. I did a little hope spell, spluttered Father Topu. Father Vidal's brow reddened with anger. A Drimwick on a human? The upside-down elf nodded. Yes. I'm sorry, but it was the only way I could save him. And Drimwick only works on the good, so I thought it safe. And I was with Little Noosh. What kind of example would it have set if I had let him die right there in front of her? Father Vidal quivered with rage. Do you know what this means? You do know that you have given the human the gifts he should not have. I take it you have told Little Noosh what happened to Little Kip. Nicholas tried to speak, but his jaw was still locked and his tongue lay there as still as a dead fish inside his mouth. No, I don't want to scare her. I want her to believe the best in people, even human people. She sees the good in. Father Vidal's skin above his beard grew redder and redder, like a sun setting over a thorn bush. Furniture shook as though the whole room were sharing Father Vidal's fury. Our powers are not for humans. Please, begged Father Topu, let us remember how things used to be before. We are elves. We use our power for good. You remember when your newspaper was full of only good news? Father Vidal laughed. It's true. The Daily Snow used to be full of good news, but good news doesn't sell newspapers. But good is good. Father Vidal nodded. I do not disagree, Father Topu. We must indeed use our powers for good. Which is why we must send a clear message that no outsiders are allowed here any more. We must have strength of purpose and unity. It's lucky for our community that nobody here has a stronger will than the holder of the staff, which is me. I was elected in democratic fashion to rule Elfhelm as I see fit. Father Topu, still struggling in the air, gasped. In fairness, Father Vidal, it did help that you owned the Daily Snow and had the newspaper to support your election. Get out, said Father Vidal. As though by force of will, Father Vidal threw poor old Father Topu right out of the window. Nicholas heard a splash and ran to see the elf had landed in the lake outside the building. He tried to shout to see if his new friend was okay, but his mouth was still firmly locked. Now, human, tell me why you came here. Nicholas turned back towards the furious black-bearded elf. He felt his jaw warm and soften and unlock. His tongue came to life again. I wanted to go to the far north. I wanted to find... What? Father Vidal put a hand in his pocket and pulled out a mouse. This mouse? Mika looked at Nicholas, terrified. Mika, are you okay? Don't worry, mice are welcome here. Mice have never done us any harm. Then he jumped out of Father Vidal's hand and scurried over to Nicholas. Nicholas picked Mika up and put him safely in his pocket. So you have what you came for. Now go, get out of my sight. No, not totally. I set out to find my father, Nicholas said. The elf's eyes widened. So why did you think he was here? He asked darkly. Because he was going to the far north. He always told me you were real, elves, I mean. And he believed in you, and I tried to believe in you too. Anyway, he was heading here with some others to find proof that you exist. And Nicholas heard his own voice crack. He could crumble, just like gingerbread. But I don't know if he ever made it here. The elf stroked his beard. Interesting. His voice was softer now, and he broke off a corner of the roof of a gingerbread house that was in the middle of the table and ate a bit of it. He came closer and gave a curious smile. Describe your father. What did he look like? He was tall, nearly twice as tall as me, and he was strong because he was a woodcutter. And he has colourful clothes that are a bit tatty, and a sleigh and an axe and... Father Vidal's eyes widened. Tell me out of curiosity, how many fingers does your father have? 9.5. Father Vidal smiled. Have you seen him? Is he still alive? Asked Nicholas desperately. Father Vidal raised the hand that was holding the staff, and Nicholas saw the table rise off the ground, along with the chairs, only to slam down again and break through the floor, falling into the dining hall below, where the elves were still eating their Christmas feast. The table and chair narrowly missed hitting anyone and smashed onto the floor below. The elves all gasped and could see Nicholas and Father Vidal, who was now raising his voice for all to hear, still standing in the council room. So let me get this right. Your father is Joel the woodcutter. Nicholas had nothing but the truth. Yes. The elves downstairs gasped again, only louder, and all started talking. His father is Joel the woodcutter. His father is Joel the woodcutter. His father is Joel the woodcutter. For a moment, Nicholas forgot whatever trouble he might be in. My father made it here. He actually made it to the far north, to Elfhelm. Did you meet him? Is he still here? Father Vidal walked around the hole that he had made in the floor and came close enough for Nicholas to smell the licorice on his breath and to see a long, thin scar beneath his beard. Oh, he came here all right. He was one of them. What do you mean, one of them? What did you do to him? Father Vidal inhaled deeply. He closed his eyes. His forehead bubbled and rippled like water in the wind. And then he did one of his favourite things. He did a big speech. And this is how it went. Oh, I did something, he said. I trusted him. That was my greatest mistake as a leader of the Elf Council. I listened to the goodwill of the elves who live here, but I kind of knew all along that goodwill is just another name for weakness, and goodwill comes from happiness. So I have tried very hard these last few weeks to increase unhappiness. And happiness is severely underrated, especially with elves. For 1,000 years, elves had been happy and joyful. They made gifts for visitors who never came here. They even built a welcome tower. What fools we have been! And every Tuesday, whoever was leader of the council would sit down and talk about welcoming strategies. There was no one to welcome. He paused for a moment and pointed to one of the several elf portraits on the wall. A painting of an elf with a large golden bun of hair on top of her head and a very large and kind smile. Mother Ivy, he said. She was the leader of the elf council before me. She had been leader for 107 years. Her slogan was joy and goodwill for all. It disgusted me, and not just me. Increasingly, over the years, elves began to realise it was wrong to live for other people. So, I put myself forward for election. Elves for elves. This was my motto, and I got in. Easy peasy. Mother Ivy wished me well, of course, and gave me a fruitcake and made some fleece stockings. I gave her a role as a forest troll peace envoy, and she was eaten within a week. They ate all of her except her left foot, which, because of some pretty bad bunions, which in hindsight I think she was probably the wrong person for the job, a bit too friendly. He sighed a long sigh as he gazed up at the portrait. Poor Mother Ivy. But the trouble is, she didn't understand that other creatures are not like us, you see. In their hearts, elves know that they are the very best of all species. They just needed someone to stand up and tell them. But I couldn't go the whole hog, not until Little Kip was kidnapped. After that, I changed things, and changed them quickly. I instantly tried to make elves more miserable for their own good. I made them wear different coloured tunics and sit them at separate tables, and I banned spickle dancing and lowered the minimum wage to 3 chocolate coins a week and stopped the unsupervised use of spinning tops. I spent every day trying to find the scariest headlines for my newspaper, The Daily Snow, and even changed Mother Ivy's slogan to "Tough on Goodwill, Tough on the Causes of Goodwill." I was proud of that. He glared at Nicholas as his smile curled like a cat's tail, and the very first thing I did was to ban outsiders and to change Welcome Tower into a prison. "For prison guards," he shouted, "take the human to the tower."